Good evening, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being because hopefully we're going to have, well, in fact, we do. We have right now on the line from the back in the Salt Lake City area, Derek Skousen, Joel Skousen's son, who's filling in for Joel for a little while. And Derek, thank you so very much for being with us tonight.
My pleasure, Dr. Stan. Thanks for having me.
Well, what are the latest things as far as World Affairs Brief? Now, for those of you who don't know, Joel publishes every week the World Affairs Brief, and you can go up on the Internet, as I do every morning, and certainly type in worldaffairsbrief.com and pull up an analysis of what's been going on in America overnight. Lots of fascinating information, lots of fascinating things, whether it be financial, whether it be political, whether it be spiritual, what's happening in the Christian church. All of it is listed here, and there's so many great references to what's going on. A brief summary, read down, pull down a few of the articles, really important, and then, of course, read them at your leisure. Well, anyway, Derek, what are we going to talk about tonight?
Well, what we've been following for the last couple of weeks is the basically the itineraries of some of the big-name people in the Bush administration, Donald Rumsfeld and Condoleezza Rice, and it's been interesting to watch where they've been going. They've been very busy these days, and kind of what some of the ramifications are. So maybe we could start off with just quickly note that that Donald Rumsfeld last week was out in Azerbaijan and Kyrgyzstan last week. We had been wondering what they were doing there, and but there was a commander of the NATO forces in Europe, his name is General Johns, and he issued a statement in the local press saying that the U.S. planned to deploy military bases in the Caspian region, so in those countries of Azerbaijan and Kyrgyzstan.
And, of course, what this is, of course, we are going to then project our military power into the very heartland of the Middle East, right adjacent to Iran. And, of course, you know, I think Iran feels very much that we are going to try to topple their government. I was reading an article, I think, on World Affairs Brief just today that said that the American government was preparing to finance opposition groups within Iran. Now, how would we feel if Russia or Communist China was financing opposition groups here in the United States? Well, we'd think that would be a subversive thing happening. I think that certainly we would be very unhappy if we were know that Iran was spending a couple of $100 million here to finance the radical groups in the United States trying to overthrow our government. And yet that's exactly what we're doing in Iran. What's the difference? And there is none. I think that this certainly is not going to win any help at all or goodwill among the Iranians.
That's right. I agree, Dr. Stan. It's very interesting. I mean, if you look at the map of that area, and when I see words like Azerbaijan and Kyrgyzstan, I often have to look at the map again, too briefly. Strategically, it's very clear that Azerbaijan and Kyrgyzstan are some of the last countries in that area surrounding Iran that do not have a significant military presence. The other countries surrounding Iran, Iraq, Pakistan, and Afghanistan, are ones that we all recognize these days as having a very strong U.S. presence.
And we already have a strong presence in Uzbekistan. We've been there backing that ruthless communist dictator for a long time. So we have all of these military bases surrounding Iran, almost as if we were preparing for an attack. And yet, of course, the president said, we're not going to attack Iran, but everything's on the table. I don't quite understand what he means by that, but he made that statement about 2 months ago. We are definitely not going to attack Iran, but everything is on the table. Pick up the story there.
That's right. No, I agree. I mean, Bush said categorically that we have no intention to attack Iran, and yet there is definitely a clear strategic movement surrounding Iran. Maybe they're just saying, oh, we're just putting pressure on Iran regarding their nuclear missile technology. And yet, there's a big difference between putting diplomatic pressure and between setting up million-dollar military bases in every single country surrounding them and pouring troops and money in, not to mention, of course, the things that you mentioned, Dr. Stan, about subversive internal and secret campaign to foment distrust and conflict inside the country at the same time.
And, you know, I think what our listeners have to understand is that our leaders really want an empire. This is all part of establishing the American empire to rule the world. And we know what happened to the British Empire. We know what happened to the Mongol Empire. We know what happened to the Babylonian Empire. We know what happened to the British Empire within the last 80 years. Why would we want to establish an empire and bankrupt our country and corrupt it morally? Because this is what always happens when an empire is established.
And one of the things that I think, you know, people don't always realize is that this doesn't, what our leaders are doing in America to a certain extent reflects upon us as we travel outside the United States and as we try and display our goodwill, as we go to the store and buy things that are made from overseas, as we try and run our businesses and our companies in a global economy. This activity is not something that we can just stand up and say, hey, look, this is something that Bush is doing and I don't approve of that. It's going to affect our lives in a very real way. Unless we, as individuals here in the United States, begin to understand and begin to rally our opinions first, and then our activity and our voices to make sure that these strategies do not happen against our will, as they are happening and have been happening for such a long time.
Well, I think that a very wise man once said, "Men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose." Men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. And unless you take a stand against what's happening, we have troops stationed in somewhere between 130 and 140 nations throughout the world today. We have troops stationed all over the world. Why do we have troops stationed all over the world? Why do we have FBI offices all over the world? I thought that the FBI was supposed to be looking into crime here in the United States. We have CIA agents stationed all over the world. If you want to be part of an empire that's going to grind other countries down, under the economic and military power of the United States, fine, but I don't. That isn't what America's all about to me. America's about freedom and liberty. And are we really bringing freedom and liberty to the people throughout the world? Or are we using our power for economic advantage for very, very special interests, so that the rich get richer and the middle class is wiped out and the poor in America will get far, far poorer? So pick up the story there, Derek. I'm very concerned about the things you're talking about.
And I am too, Dr. Stan. This is certainly just one of many issues to think about. I mean, and to consider about what our personal role may be in the effects that are happening on foreign policy and on they're not just happening out there, they're happening in our name. And when we go outside and we see all the cars with their little magnetic stickers that say support our troops, we should reflect and pause and think about what supporting our troops really means and supporting our country really means. I think all Americans in general, when they see those things, when they reflect on those things, they have a certain ideal in mind, and that ideal follows the principles of real patriotic freedom and liberty. And what we are seeing that is happening in our country's name does not reflect those principles whatsoever. And that should be a concern of everyone, whether they have a sticker on their car or not.
I agree with you totally. Support of the government does not necessarily mean support of the country. And you can love America and love everything it stands for, but when your government is doing something immoral and wrong and lying to the people, then you have to take a stand against them, because to remain silent in a time of crisis makes cowards of men.
That's right. You know, I guess I was going to talk about Condoleezza Rice, but what we were just talking about right now reminded me of a story that we posted in the World Affairs Brief today about Representative Ron Paul in Texas and what he posted today. I've always found it very useful to keep up with what Ron Paul in Texas is talking about, even though I am not from Texas myself, but because Ron Paul is, in my opinion, one of the few representatives in Congress who seems to be taking a fairly active role there and a fairly a principled role. He's certainly following his own principles, and many of those are very patriotically and liberty oriented. Today, he released a new paper that talks about the trend to control dietary supplements and basically our individual choice of health here in the United States. And there was a very useful article that we commented on a little bit before in the World Affairs Brief, but about the worldwide efforts through the United Nations and the World Trade Organization and as that relates to the Food and Drug Administration here in the U.S., to put additional limitations on basic dietary supplements, which in other countries require doctor's prescriptions and other much more limited forms. But we here in the United States feel that we're in charge of our own health, and we may find that feeling being usurped by some of the regulatory things that are coming down the line.
Well, I think that our listeners really need to understand that the big drug companies are in real trouble. I mean, they face hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars, of lawsuits for the Vioxx, Beta, and, of course, some of the other statin drugs are going to come off the market very soon. And so what they're doing is lobbying Congress to pass this thing called Codex, which will mean you're going to have to get your vitamins with prescriptions here in the United States, and they're going to cut the rate down so low it really won't do much of any good. I mean, you need, if you're taking vitamin C, you need probably close to 1,000 to 2,000 milligrams a day. And they're going to get it down so you'll only get about 200 milligrams out of a capsule, and you're going to have a prescription to get that. What they really are going to do is undermine the health of the American people. I think the American people are healthy because they haven't been listening to the doctors, because they're taking vitamins and minerals and the other supplements that our body really needs. Every animal in the world, except for some sort of a bat and for, I think it's guinea pigs, produces vitamin C, and we don't. We need to supplement vitamin C. And they're doing everything they can to convince us vitamin C is not effective and to cut back the amount that we can actually get in pill form. And I really believe, of course, part of this is a conscious effort on the drug companies that we're going to have to buy our products through them, and that's how they're going to recoup some of their losses for their frank malpractice in putting out drugs that they knew were not safe and have killed well, with, between Vioxx and the other COX-2 inhibitors, probably 100,000 Americans. And I'm talking about Celebrex, Vioxx, and Bextra. And Vioxx has not come back on the market. Bextra has been taken off the market. And Celebrex certainly should be taken off the market. So anyway, but these drug companies are doing everything they can to push this. And I believe that they will get away with it unless the American people let the people in Congress know that if they vote for this sort of thing, why, they're not going to get reelected.
Yes, I mean, this is an issue that really cuts to the very heart of our everyday lives. I mean, and what's interesting about it that I see, Dr. Stan, is the direction in which this pressure is coming from. This isn't just a few people from the Democrats in our Congress who came up with this idea. This is coming from the United Nations and through the World Trade Organization. And so what we're seeing in this example here is pressure from these worldwide organizations that is coming down and touching what you eat every day and how you think and how you live about your something that's very, very personal in most of our lives, which is our personal health. And this idea that the United Nations is going to start having a say in those kinds of things should be a wake-up call to the direction that the United Nations, the World Trade Organization, and through the FDA and multinational drug companies are really trying to influence the way that you think and act on at a very daily level.
And I share your concern, and I hope that people pull that article down. Will it be posted again tomorrow, do you know?
I'm not sure. I see it. It's up here on www.house.gov/Paul. It's Ron Paul's representative page.
No, I mean, I always go to Google and probably pull that down then.
That's right. And if not, we still have a link up there at the World Affairs Brief.
Right. And that's where I read the article today. Excellent article.
So maybe I can take us back to what I was thinking about talking about, which is where Condoleezza Rice has been and where she's going. And there's a variety of news stories that are kind of following her. It's almost like she's got this little dust cloud of press reporters and current events that there are flitting around. I'm not sure if she's causing these or if she's trying to respond quickly to everything that's been going on these days.
She's part of the ruling elite. She's not probably the top echelon, but certainly she's a representative of the ruling elite, and she's pushing this whole globalist agenda.
So she just left Eastern Europe and Russia and the states out there, spent a few days talking to Russia and some of those what I call the Russian satellite states, even though they are not officially Russian satellite states. And she talked about several things, basically told them as strongly as State Department language would allow that there are some concerns about the way that democracy is being run out there, and it's obvious that democracy is a sham, and so I think they feel they have to say something, although they've been surprisingly quiet about that previously. It's a complex issue there.
One of the things I noticed on your World Affairs Brief today was the fact that Russia is beginning to rearm from a nuclear point of view, and she's spending a tremendous amount of money on building new nuclear weapons while we are unilaterally destroying our weapons. In fact, our peacekeepers, I think those are the MX missiles, we're going to destroy the last 50 of them within this next months, either that or put conventional warheads on them. Why are we unilaterally disarming from a nuclear point of view when, as you point out in the World Affairs Brief today, the Russians are in full military production as much as they can afford to increase their nuclear strike force against America? Doesn't make sense.
Yes, that's a very interesting article, actually, and that plays into some interesting fallout from Rice's visit there. And it's kind of curious how that happened. You start to wonder what was said but not reported on, and she came back. She's just left Russia. Now Putin gave his State of the Union address, some interesting things there in the State of the Union address, and what's looking like a big defense budget increase for Russia.
And a big defense budget increase, but as that article said, it's going to be for nuclear weapons. That's not going to be used against Georgia or the Ukraine, that's for sure. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Joel Skousen, and we're going to be talking about the articles in the World Affairs Brief. And if you don't go there first thing every morning and look at what they've compiled for you, you really don't know what's going on in the world. You're sure not going to get it from ABC, CBS, and NBC. Well, Dr. Stan, our guest this evening is Derek Skousen. Derek, pick up the story.
Sure. So we were talking about what Condoleezza Rice had said when she went out there, and what the press said that she'd been talking about were two things. One, the lack of democratic things that were going on in those countries and in some of the satellite countries around around Russia, and she also specifically mentioned that Russia's tactics economically were very ineffective, and she was alluding, of course, to the Yukos oil issues and the and just the basically the drop off in foreign investment into Russia. Basically, Russia is just a don't go there country for foreign investment. They've really been burned ever since the late 1990s about Russia recognizing how problematic Russia is, not just on the private side and all of the corruption in private companies, but the extreme amount of government intervention at a corrupt level in any company that is invested in over there. And so the foreign investment has really dried up in Russia. And it was clear that Condoleezza Rice spent some time talking to the Russians about what they are going to need to do to increase their foreign investment and basically pay for the programs that they want to. And so it was interesting today as President Putin stood up for basically his State of the Union address. I guess they call it the State of the Nation address out there, and talked about several issues. And There were two issues that are being concentrated on in the reports of that address. The first one is that President Putin made some very surprisingly strong statements about what a mistake it was for the Soviet Union to collapse, and what a mistake it was for Russia to disband in the way that it did, and how strongly he feels that that USSR should not have come apart the way that it did, and that's very telling. It says a lot of things. One is that it indicates a trend towards an increased amount of control by Russia through President Putin's influence on the satellite states and the countries that were formerly under the Soviet Union. The other thing is that, as regular listeners to your show, Dr. Stan, know, is that the Soviet Union, as a communist organization, didn't really collapse. That the controllers in there are all the same people. All the strings are still attached. Just the external organizational, it was basically just a restructuring, like a corporate restructuring. You still have all the same employees who are all still doing the same job, but the dotted lines and the organizational lines have been snipped and managed and moved around.
I think the only people who really believe that the Soviet Union collapsed are the American people. We've been told that over and over and over again. Communism is dead. It no longer exists. We won the Cold War. But why are there 1.25 million people living under communism in China?
Right.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Derek Skousen, and we're talking about, of course, World Affairs Brief. We're talking about the articles they have up there, and of course, Derek was just saying that, you know, Putin had recently said in his state of the state message or whatever it is, that he was sorry that Russia had fallen apart when, of course, the Berlin Wall came down, and that he thought that was a terrible mistake. And then Derek pointed out, of course, that, you know, we're supposed to believe that communism is dead. Why would we believe that when all of the same people are still in power? They just call themselves now ex-communists, and I had simply pointed out they've sold the American people the idea communism is dead. And we never refer to China as a communist nation, but it is, or North Korea as a communist nation, but it is, or Vietnam is a communist nation, which it is, down the line. Everything is about the perception of the American people. You don't have to convince the Russian people what's going on. They know that the same people are in power. It's just that the Americans don't. So pick up the story there, Derek.
It's really the issue, as you implied there, Dr. Stan, is the issue is power. And whether or not people say that communism is still there or not, that's just a smokescreen. What's important to watch is who's in power. Where do these people come from? What kind of power did they hold before? And, you know, are these people nobodies who are now in charge of these countries, these so-called non-communist countries? No, they are the former people who were in power underneath the communist system before. In other words, the people who are in charge, the people who still have power, are the same oppressors of the decades previously, and are of the same organizations and of the same parties of the previous oppressors. Putin himself was the head of the KGB, and so these kinds of statements by Putin that, you know, oh, it's such a shame that the USSR has been has collapsed. Is very imply some interesting things to those of us who listen to a show like this and who know that the power structure has not collapsed, but is in fact the same. And since this power structure is still in place, when they are alluding to the disappointment over the external collapse, the facade of this collapse, it implies then that they are planning to put together those ties again to a certain level and to re-strengthen those ties. Now, the question is, how are they going to go about doing that? How are they going to go about doing that practically? And this is where Condoleezza Rice and her visit comes back in, because Putin, in his State of the Nation address, spent the rest of the time talking about some of the economic issues that they needed to go about doing, and specifically those involved bringing foreign investment back into the country and locking down the flight of internal money that has been leaving the country during the last few years. The Yukos oil and some of those other ones were part of that. That lockdown, and Putin is definitely alluding to strategies to turn the tide of taxation towards a stronger tax collection process, but one that does not turn away the influx of foreign money. Basically, Putin is clearly seeing that in China they are getting a tremendous amount of foreign investment, which is paying for a very strong communist power structure over there, and he is now, and I'm implying, but I don't know this, underneath the Condoleezza Rice and the State Department's advice, trying to implement something similar.
In other words, try to get American corporations to invest there, just exactly as we are encouraging our companies to invest in communist China, and they get all sorts of special tax breaks here, and of course they could take their products and ship them into America with no tariffs on them. We're doing everything we can to encourage our factories to move overseas, and none of this makes any sense. unless perhaps there is another agenda. We're going to be back with Derek Skousen, and we'll certainly welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. If you agree, if you disagree, we'd love to hear your thoughts. Otherwise, we're going to keep going through the World Affairs Brief. There's so much to talk about. And when we get back, I will tell you how you can subscribe to the World Affairs Brief, a fascinating source of information you want to read every week. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Derek Skousen. Derek, go ahead and pick up the story there.
Thanks, Dr. Stan. So one of the first thing that's quite clear that Russia is going to be doing with this newfound currency, I mean, basically they're going to start taxing money that has left the country and try and bring that back at a flat tax rate, interestingly enough. They're going to start bringing some of that money back. They're taking over, of course, the Yukos oil, which was in a pseudo way privatized, and that should be bringing in some major cash. And the question is, where, of course, is that money going? Well, we posted recently a story on the worldaffairsbrief.com site, a story that mentioned that the Russian defense budget has increased from $4 billion in the late 90s to $22 billion of next year. And this kind of very massive, almost six times an increase over the last 6 years is a big deal, of course, and this is where much of that taxation money is going to have to be sucked into.
But where are they going to put that? That's the question. And that was what was interesting about that. What are the Russians going to be investing their military money in?
That's right. And the investments are only partially towards the kind of investments that we would expect here in the United States, because we're used to we're also used to making some big defense budget increases over the last 2 years, and that has been, of course, driven by the so-called war on terror, and has gone into mostly conventional warfare items. And however, the Russian defense budget is still strongly oriented towards nuclear arms.
Nuclear arms, and I think that every American should understand that those nuclear arms are for American cities, not for Chinese cities, not for Iranian cities. They're for American cities.
They are for American cities. Now, not all of them may be delivered by Russia right away, because Russia has had a long history of shipping those nuclear arms out to some other countries to take the flak for this, Iran being one of them. And we've also been seeing some arms deals towards Egypt, and not nuclear, but conventional towards Syria.
Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening, Derek Skousen. Before we go on, and before I forget, Derek, would you tell our listeners how they can, first of all, get a copy of the World Affairs Brief, and then, if they want to, subscribe to it?
Sure. Thanks, Dr. Stan. The way to get a hard copy of the regular email newsletter sent to you is to call a toll-free number. And that is 877-518-5888. That's toll-free, 877-518-5888. And that will give you the a copy of the latest newsletter. You can read that, and if folks are interested in it, they can go to the World Affairs Brief website at www.worldaffairsbrief.com and click on the subscribe button there, and that will just show you how to very quickly sign up and receive the World Affairs Brief analysis written by my dad, Joel Skousen, every week in their email box.
And it's certainly well worthwhile getting. Well, let's go to John, who's calling us from Ohio. John, did you have a question for our guest?
Yes, I just feel that on the one hand, you're going in one direction and pointing out that the United States government is justifying all of its interventions and its bases and its CIA, FBI operations and wars around the world based on its own commercial interest, its greed of the really the transnational corporations and the Wall Street bankers and the rest of it. And I applaud you for that. But I feel that you're going in exactly the opposite direction in providing the tyrannical justification that we had for the last 55 years for the Cold War. The Russians are coming. The Russians are coming. When I think it's even more illogical now, and I think that you know, the demise of the Soviet Union was cited in the Project for a New American Century as one of the primary reasons why these gangs of warmongers and the neocon Bush gang were saying they could get away with attacking countries around the world because there was no longer a restraining, even a slight restraining influence from the Soviet Union that no longer existed. Uh-huh. And when you look at 10,000 weapons, by 10,000 nuclear weapons pointed at the Soviet Union and China, and the huge military budget of the United States, I think they're in a reactive mode to the tiny little bit of 28 nuclear weapons in China. Certainly can't compete with
all right, fine, John. Let's get Derek's response to what you're saying. What you're saying is that there is nothing to worry about from the communists, and, of course, they are only responding to the threat from America. Would you like to respond to that? Because John's point appears to be very well made. So how would you respond to that, Derek?
Well, I think that's a great question, Dr. Stan. And, John, thank you for calling up and asking that, because that's a clarification that is really worthwhile to be made here. And the point is probably best made by saying that the U.S. and the that neither the U.S. nor the Russians are the primary players or the primary instigators of these things. The U.S. isn't controlling the agenda, and Russia isn't controlling the agenda. This isn't a two superpower world here that we're talking about. What we're really talking about here is a strategy for creating ultimately a single world government, and the U.S. is one player in making this world government happen, and Russia is another player in making this world government happen, and all of these players have their different histories and their different backgrounds, and they're all going to play a role in making this thing happen. The U.S. is currently playing a role as being an instigator of global conflict in the Middle East, and Russia is playing a role of being a benign playing a role of being an underling, an underdog at this stage, who formerly was, as John so eloquently said, a counterbalancing agent to the U.S. Now, if one's goal was to create a single world government, then the strategy would work out very well then if you, in fact, create a scenario in which one country begins to dominate and cause aggression and an obvious problems throughout the world, that the that some kind of response would need to be happened to protect that, and Russia is the one who is being set up to be the responsive person doing that. I'm not saying that Russia will probably win if they were to react in an antagonistic way against the United States, but they certainly have the leftover Cold War material to cause a tremendous damage. And damage that would cause a tremendous outcry among all of the world, especially here in the United States, an outcry to the point that peace must be in fact established at any cost, including the loss of sovereignty of individual countries and the loss of nations.
John, let me put in my thought, and then we'll let you close. I think that if you go into the origin of communism back in 1918, if you read my book, based upon writings of people who are actually there, American corporations and the Federal Reserve System and represents the British government were doing everything they could to bolster communism. Communism really isn't a very efficient means. I mean, a free enterprise is a much more efficient system. I believe in free enterprise. I do not believe in monopoly capitalism. And if you study the history of the Soviet Union from 1918 right up to the present day, they've always got infusions of technology and of financial aid and of help in one form or another. And Professor Sutton did a wonderful job of that in his three volumes of Western Technology and Soviet Economic Development, in his book Wall Street and the Rise of Bolshevism, and of course in his book The Best Enemies Money Could Buy. He did such a good job that they threw him out of Hoover Institute, because the last thing we ever want is for the American people to know that we were financing communism. Another man who wrote very extensively on that was a congressman named Larry McDonald, who just happened to disappear when his plane, his commercial airline he was on, was shot down over Sakhalin Island, supposedly by the, I'm sure, by the communists. But his body was never found, and many of us think that that the entire crew, actually, and all the passengers survived, but they had to get rid of Larry McDonald because he was pointing out we had financed communism since inception exactly as we are financing communist China today. Now, would you like to make a comment?
Yes, I'm very aware of those claims, and I consider them false. I know the Birch Society. I followed them down through the years, and I think it's really just another more extreme version of the kind of corporate establishment military-industrial propaganda, with a little whipped cream on top saying that the communists are these terrible guys out to get us, but not only that, the bankers put them into power. It's a kind of a putting of a fake populist cover of establishment propaganda.
All right, John, have you read any of Professor Sutton's work?
I've read Birch Society.
Have you read Professor Sutton's work?
Not that work, the Clausen work and the rest of it.
Could I suggest that you get hold of his work? Certainly, I think he did an excellent job. If you read Professor Sutton's trilogy, Professor Sutton was not a member of the John Birch Society by any manner or means, but he brought out some things that some people don't want. Now, there's a tendency on some people's part to say, oh, the communists aren't bad, nothing wrong with communism. Believe me, this was a terrible, brutal system, and they killed about 60 million of their own people, but the communist apologists will always deny that. But this is the reality of what happened. The great problem is that both sides are wrong. And until we understand that everything is being manipulated from behind the scenes by powerful spiritual forces, we're not going to be able to evaluate really what's taking place. But I think Derek is absolutely right. We're seeing a beautiful example of the dialectics. Two forces in opposition, and of course the thesis, the antithesis, coming to the new synthesis, which will be the world government. Would you like to comment on that before we go to our next caller, Derek?
Well, just very briefly, I mean, I think John's original question was in fact very valid to clarify that, you know, that what I've been talking about here in terms of Russia's rearmament activities and other things is not just the same standard communist threat. I'm really talking more about that the U.S. and Russia are players in a much larger game, and that this larger game involves a lot of those things. Russia is a pawn in the game, but it's important to keep an eye on Russia because Russia's role in the game in the future will become critical to the end game as sovereignties throughout all the world, especially the United States.
I think that's so well said. Let's go to Lorna. She's patiently holding on a cell phone up there in Coeur d'Alene. Lorna, do you have a question or comment?
Yes. With our manufacturer base here in the U.S. being completely, basically wiped out and destroyed, I was very concerned about what they're planning on doing with the Chinese currency and reevaluating it, and I feel that would pretty much destroy our dollar and our economy, and I was wondering what your thoughts and your opinions were on that.
Well, what are your thoughts on that, Derek?
Well, that's a very important aspect what she's mentioned, that our manufacturing base has dropped off to almost nothing over the many years, and it's all moved overseas regarding the specific question about China's currency, well, despite Walmart, not everything has moved to China directly. And we are, in fact, seeing a variety of manufacturing opportunities that are going on throughout the world. Will the dollar drop dramatically and impact that? That's a little bit too specific.
We get everything
exactly
from China, so our buying power would definitely go down if their currency was reevaluated and went up.
All right. How would you respond to that, Derek? Wouldn't that be logical? In other words, so many of the things we buy at Walmart would be much more expensive, if the Chinese were to revalue the currency.
Yes, that's exactly, and it would happen. It's happening now anyway. Inflation, the last figures of inflation were strongly upwards, and it would just happen faster when or if the Chinese currency were to devalue itself. Now, whether they're going to do that right away or not is a different question. Most of those Asian countries, including China, are doing everything they can to prop up their dollar because their economies are dependent upon the America's buying power, and they know that they will collapse
China,
as well.
China does not want to, but there is a lot of outside pressure, evidently, from Bush and from the U.S. for them to prop up their dollar and reevaluate it so that it is higher.
Well, I think, Lorna, you have to understand that the Senate just passed some legislation, whether it'll go through the House or not, but the Senate passed legislation saying we're going to slap a 27% tariff on everything coming in from China unless they revalue their currency. Now, if they do revalue their currency, then they won't have so much money to buy our bonds. Then who's going to buy our bonds? Right now, we're dependent upon China, primarily China and Japan, to buy about $2.7 billion a day in bonds. So if we actually cut their access to American dollars by forcing them to revalue the yuan, why, then we're going to be in real trouble economically. So it's sort of a lose-lose situation. I think the answer is they're going to lower the living standards of the American people, and that is part of the plan. It is part of the plan to redistribute the wealth, not only within nations, but between nations. That's point 10 of the Earth Chart. If you haven't read it, you need to read it. It is the master plan for what's going on today.
Yes, I believe that. I know that they were temporarily propping up the dollar because they were afraid of the dollar falling. So I've been watching that because I've been into foreign currency. I'm starting to get into that. So I've been really watching that lately.
Well, you're very much smarter than most people are, Lorna, because most people don't understand what's happening from the currency point of view. How would you respond to her, Derek?
Well, I would agree in the importance of watching that. I also agree in the critical nature of the lack of kind of backup plan, basically, because of a lack of manufacturing and abilities to support our own economy inside the U.S. if the dollar
Well, even if we did have the things that with the permits and the taxes, I mean, they would not allow us to really build back up our manufacturing. I mean, we are giving incentives to other countries to take our manufacturing base, and they are just destroying it here.
But that's being done on purpose, Lorna. When you understand that, it all makes sense.
Oh, I understand. I don't know how high are they? Do they want to reevaluate the yuan? Do you know?
We're asking them to increase it 27.5%.
Oh, yeah. Well, if everything went up for the dollar that much, that would really
it would cost. Then we would, of course, see a lot of our people really impoverished here in this country. And that's really what it's all about, but they can't tell the American people the master plan. I mean,
no.
Would you vote for politicians who are trying to bankrupt this country?
Oh, of course not.
And maybe if you realize that the leaders of both political parties are dedicated, they're all dedicated to globalism and the transfer of our wealth to other countries. When you understand that, it all makes sense. If you don't understand that, nothing makes sense.
well, they try to sell it all for our own good so that we could compete, but they have no intention of rebuilding the manufacturing bases here, so.
Well, how would you like to leave? We're going to have to let Lorna go. Derek was going to leave because I think she's making a lot of sense. I wish most people understood what she understands.
Well, I think that that she is making a lot of sense. It is something that we really need to keep an eye on, and we also need to remember that the U.S. economy is really stuck between a rock and a hard place. You know, between the reducing some of the pressure on the dollar that has been coming from the fact that so many dollars have been bouncing across overseas, and the fact that the cost of those issues are coming back in terms of lower standard of living here in the U.S. And so the politicians are under inflationary pressures. They're under they're under employment pressures, and all of these things are such that the economy itself is at such a tenuous point that there's just so little maneuvering room they have, and that's what we're seeing going on today.
Okay, Lorna, well, thank you so very much for calling. Really appreciate it, and please get those people up there and Coeur d'Alene all listening, will you?
Well, thank you. I will.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Derek Skousen to wrap up the program, but you have to understand that when globalism means we create equality throughout the world, and we raise the living standards of the American worker to that of the Mexican peasant. If you understand that, it all makes sense. Otherwise, none of this makes sense. There is another agenda behind everything happening today. And that's why I think listening to programs like this, getting the documentation, finding out if it's really true, don't look at things stereotyped, begin looking outside the box. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. You've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program, Derek.
Well, there are lots of news stories to keep an eye on these days. I think that one of the most interesting things to remember from what we've been trying to follow today is to keep an eye on where some of the major people are going, especially people like Condoleezza Rice and Donald Rumsfeld, as they travel around the world. And boy, they are on the airplane constantly these days, going back and forth from one country to another, and the crises are around them like a swarm of flies as they go through this traveling, and that all of these world news crises and issues that are surrounding them are not issues that we should be ignoring. World news is important to us here today, and the international news affects our lives directly. And whether that's in the discussions that we had about our currency and our own manufacturing and how that affects our livelihood, to the World Trade Organization and the UN affecting what we can eat, to the basic perception of people out there in the rest of the world who see the U.S. and Americans as bullies and aggressors. And that's something that we need to be aware of and be very careful about and work actively and individually to improve.
And I really fear that what our government leaders are doing is doing everything they can to antagonize the rest of the world and turn them against us. I think we've done a pretty good job of turning the Muslim world against us. I think our policies, our corporate policies in South America and Africa are doing a pretty good job to turn the people of South America and Africa against us. And I fear that when World War III comes, which I know your father believes, and I suspect you believe, and I know I believe, that we are in World War III and there are going to be terrible, terrible things happening, America is going to stand alone. But the problem is America has lost the moral high ground. And unless the American people are willing to recapture that high ground, I really fear for my country. Well, Derek, I want to thank you so very much for being with us. It's always a pleasure. I thought your response to our caller this evening was a very, very good one, pointing out the dialectics. And until people understand, as Derek said, it's not simply American policy. Our policies are not being made by the people necessarily in Washington, D.C. They're made by others, just exactly as the policies in the Soviet Union, I don't think, are being necessarily made in the Soviet Union. I think they're being made by by others. Have you thought about that? I'm sure you've thought about that.
Yes, and it's just something that we should be aware of, is that America is a pawn in the game, and Russia is a pawn in the game, and we need to stand up as individuals to make it clear that we do not want to be a pawn. We want to be a free and independent sovereign leader.
God bless you. Thanks very much, Derek. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and if you'd really like to get some idea of the things we're talking about today, then the funding of communism from its very inception. We suggest a book entitled Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution. Of course, we also carry Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler. I mean, Adolf Hitler was largely financed by people in the United States and in Great Britain to get him off the ground to build up the Wehrmacht in preparation for World War II. And so it was, of course, even during the Vietnam War, when America financed the largest truck plant anywhere in the world, and it was built in the Soviet Union. If you've read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, we quote from John Lehman, at the time Secretary of the Navy, addressing the graduate course class at Annapolis, saying, you know, within a few months you're going to be at sea, looking across a few hundred yards of water at the finest American equipment and technology and weapons, but of course they're going to be on Soviet ships. And that's what it's really all about. You need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. You need to read that. You need to read Professor Sutton. Two books, Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution, Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler, and The Best Enemies Money Could Buy. And then if I could suggest my video by that same name, it's an interview I did with Professor Sutton before he passed away, The Best Enemies Money Could Buy. And when you begin connecting the dots, you wonder why we went to war in Vietnam to begin with. Well, we went there to fight communism. Did we really? That's what you were told. That's what the boys who went over there who fought there believed. But all during that time, we were financing the Soviet Union. We built the Kama River plant for them. We financed it. Then we built the Fiat plant that was built by the Italians. But we paid the money for it, and we were lending massive amounts to Russia. Which, of course, really was never able financially, because Russia has never been a strong military power, other than the technology and the finances that we gave them so they could build their missiles. But during the Vietnam War, of course, we gave them the money so they could build the fighter jets, the MiG fighters, to send to North Vietnam so they could use them to shoot down our planes. Do you honestly believe that North Vietnam was building MiG planes and sophisticated artillery, radar-guided artillery? Of course not. We created the best enemy money could buy. And when you understand that, you really need to understand what's going on today. You need to get our video and our syllabus entitled Iraq, the Untold Story. It will take you into the background of all of the wars of the last century. And until you understand that we were not allowed to win in Vietnam because we didn't go there to defeat communism any more than we went to Korea to defeat communism. You see, communism has always been the enemy. You always need a foil. And you can go back and read what Plato wrote in the Republic. And he said this. He said, when the tyrant has defeated the enemy by conquest or treaty and there is nothing to fear, then he's always out scaring up another enemy so that he will be able to rally the people behind him. And that was written about 2,400 years ago. It's like deja vu all over again. It's a standard trick. It's been used over and over again. So anyway, ladies and gentlemen, remember our number. It's 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Let me mention that we're changing our shortwave frequencies on the afternoon program. We will be on for the first and second hours, 9.495. That's 9.495. And the first hour in our afternoon program, 9.985. The 9.495 starts on the Thursday of this week. 9.985, which is the first hour of the afternoon program, starts actually on next Monday. So we ask you to pray for America, pray for revival, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. We'll be right back in just a moment with Bob Chapman. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. We need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have on the line Bob Chetman from the International Forecaster, and we're going to be talking about what we talked a little bit about the last hour, and that is the tragic financial situation of the American economy, of the American dollar. But the average individual really doesn't understand what's going on. After all, I mean, we always can go out and borrow more money on our house, get money that way. Interest rates are low. Things are really pretty good now. Isn't that true, Bob?
Well, I think most people think that, but I don't think they really understand what's being done to them.
Well, I think that's why we want to have you on the program. So why don't you tell us what's really going on, not what they're going to hear from MSNBC or from the establishment, but what's really happening economically to our country?
Well, I think one of the first premises you have to be able to accept is that our government, irrespective of the political party, does not allow the American public to really know the truth about virtually anything. And that is not more, that is more outstanding in the statistics which they release through the Bureau of Labor Statistics. And establishment economists today are starting to question figures like the CPI, which is the inflation barometer which they use, which they say inflation's around 3%, and these establishment economists, when you can get them to say anything, are talking 5.5 to 6%. Here at the International Forecaster, we're talking about 9.5%. And I think if you look at all the things that you buy, you'll come to the same conclusion we did, probably for different reasons. The reason being you're spending the money, like, you know, we are. But this is statistically based, and we've been doing this for 46 years, so we have a fairly good idea of what we're doing.
But, Bob, don't they, when they're going to come up with these inflation statistics, if the price of something is going up, don't they throw it off the list and bring on something? For instance, they look at the goods we get from Walmart. They don't want to talk about energy. They don't want to talk about the price of houses. They want to talk about rents. But they don't talk about, you know, the skyrocketing health care costs. They don't talk about the skyrocketing price of housing. They don't talk about the oil. They don't really even talk about the most of the goods we buy in the stores. Aren't they very selective? Well, that old adage that figures don't lie, but liars sometimes figure?
That's correct. And as an example, they don't include energy, nor... You having a break?
We're just going... go ahead. Don't you worry. I'll let you know when we have to stop talking.
Okay. God, I lost my train of thought.
We were talking about, of course, how they figure these things, and they don't put energy into CPI.
They don't include energy, nor the cost of housing in the CPI. They use rent.
And so they're really very, very careful, and anything that really gets out of line, they just take it off, and it's sort of like the Dow Jones, you know. It's all a matter of perception. It has very little to do with reality. We're going to be back in just a moment with Bob Chapman. We're going to be discussing about what's really going on and, of course, the very, very real danger to our economy and the survival of America. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Go ahead, Bob. Pick up the story from there.
And what they do is they hedonically change numbers. Now, what does hedonics mean? It's something that they started using in 1991, and so they've been using it about 15 years. And they'll say that if the price of steak goes from $5 to $8 a pound, the people will switch to ground round, which is, you know, perhaps $3 a pound, whatever. And so that's, they do replacement. Or they'll say that a product has come out that has made the previous product inferior. And so that cuts back on the inflationary load. And they distort the figures. And if they don't like something because it's going up too fast in the CPI, they just omit it.
Well, Bob, do you think this is because they're really aiming at the perception of the American people, how we feel about, you know, what's going on today, and if the American people sense that there really is a rampant inflation, why they would be very, very concerned about what's happening to the value of all their savings and their bonds and their pension and all of these fixed assets? And isn't a lot of this just to keep the people from really understanding what's going on?
Well, government has come to that conclusion. And probably for the last 25 years, they've been engaging in, you know, things that deceive the American people to give the perception that everything is okay. And a good example of that was during the late 1990s with the stock market, the dot-com boom and everything. Of course, everybody was going to get rich forever. And most people lost 50, 60, 70% of their money in the market. Now we have another bubble like that, and it's in the real estate market. And it is a bubble, there's no question. And I expect that it's going to start coming unglued. In fact, I believe that I see the beginnings of that, particularly in cities like San Francisco, which is not too far away from you.
Well, believe me, where I am, why, the average house is $810,000 or $820,000, if you can believe it. I mean, we live in Santa Cruz, a very desirable place to live, but these figures are just unreal.
It can't go on forever. And they've done this by suppressing interest rates. They have also done it by making approximately 50% of their loans, which is subpar. In other words, people who, under previous normal circumstances, would have never gotten a loan, they give out loans which are 105 or 10 or 20% of the asking price. In California, as an example.
Hold that thought there. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Bob Chapman, and he's talking about what's happening as far as the housing market is concerned, and he thinks the bubble is about to explode. In other words, let the prices of air out of the high prices out of the housing market. And he's just saying that a lot of people are being given loans that never should have been given loans. They're being given, you know, almost 100% loans in many instances. And the government, by so doing, has created this tremendous amount of artificial liquidity. In other words, there's nothing behind it other than this expectation. And you have massive amounts of money being created simply because the housing market is going up. But there's no real money there. It's all a mirage. And yet, of course, you can get it and you go out and buy things. But, of course, this is what happens at the end stage of an economic cycle with a fiat money system, when there is nothing behind your money except the integrity of our politicians. Would that be a fair statement, Bob?
It is, and historically, the integrity of politicians has not been very good. And we can go back 3,500 years. And there's not very many good ones. But in California, very few fixed loans are being made, 30-year fixed mortgage, 15-year fixed mortgage. In other parts of the country, they are being made, not in a great way. But in California, almost all the loans are either interest-only or they're adjustable-rate mortgages.
And, of course, when the adjustable rate is fine until they adjust the rate, and then, of course, they can raise it up, you know, at a regular rate so much a year, and they can eventually bankrupt you where you're not going to be able to make the payments on your house.
Well, I think that a two-point rise in interest rates from here would start to do that. And I believe between now and the end of the year, we're going to get a three-quarter of a point rise, maybe a little bit more, but... that probably be it, because Alan Greenspan leaves his office in January. And next year, I believe that rates will go up 1 to 2%. And if I'm correct, those people are going to be in some serious trouble.
And I agree with you totally, and I think that after me, the deluge, you know, when Alan Greenspan leaves office, I don't think there's anything that's going to stop this whole thing from getting into some very real economic problems.
After me comes the deluge.
Right.
I think that... the problems of the early 1980s were purged out of the economy to a great extent by interest rates to get up to 20.5%. Since then, there's been the advent of two things. Number one, tremendous debt, starting in the late 1980s, and outsourcing. And these two factors have created a whole different world for us than what we had available to us in 1980 when Paul Volcker came in and cleaned up the mess. What has to happen is the system has to be purged. And how you do that is by raising interest rates.
But, of course, when they do that, an awful lot of people are going to lose their homes, or they're going to lose their cars, they're going to lose everything that they bought on credit, aren't they?
That's correct. I expect probably 35 to 40% of people will go bankrupt. And of course, with the rules they now have, they just changed bankruptcy law. And you cannot write off credit card debt anymore. And a lot of people just normally have credit card debt of somewhere between $50,000 and $100,000, although the average is $14,000 plus. And so those people who go into bankruptcy have to work out a plan with their creditors to pay that off.
I think they're going to call that indentured servitude. I think that,
you know, that's what I call it.
And I think that the amazing thing is, Bob, I think that the people in Washington D.C. know exactly what lies ahead. I think that's why they've changed the bankruptcy laws. In other words, they know that the whole thing is going to fall apart, and they're not going to let the people just walk away from their debt. They're going to have to, you know, grind out at menial jobs enough money to pay back the money that they borrowed so easy, but will be so difficult to pay back.
Well, in that kind of a situation, it's impossible to pay back the principal. So someone who's 40 years old will pay interest for the remainder of his life.
It's sort of like what we're doing.
So it'll be a form of servitude without going, you know, to a jail or becoming a chattel mortgage. And many of the people who came to America from England were chattel mortgage, and they worked as indentured people for 5 or 10 years to pay off debts either they or somebody within their family had incurred.
And, of course, this is really what we've done to other countries. We've got the countries into debt, so they had to tax the people to pay the interest on their debt, and then the people in those third world countries, in many ways, were simply slaves of the government paying their taxes, but the money wasn't staying there to help the people. It was coming back here. And what goes around comes around, and I really fear the day of retribution is coming, but the people who have lived here so well off the backs of the people in third world countries.
Well, you're absolutely right, and... this has come into startling view in South America presently, where the reaction to the looting of all those countries for years and years and years now is they all have leftist governments. And, of course, that's not the answer. You know, immediately, at least in some of the countries that have the money, they can help the plight of the poor. But most of them don't have the wherewithal to get the funds to internally help the people in their country. So they're really fighting a losing battle. Plus, many of them are saddled with great debt, although Argentina just recently walked away from theirs, and in the meantime bought lots of gold.
And, of course, I really think, of course, the leftist government is not the solution either, because they'll take away the people's property, they'll take away the people's freedom, as they have in communist Cuba. and it is communist, even though the media never refers to it as communist Cuba. It's now just Cuba. But so what we're doing in many respects is we're driving these people in South American countries into the hands of the radical left, who will enslave them in another way. So these people are losers no matter what they do.
Well, you're absolutely right, and I think the only country that's really made a lot of headway in the last few years is Venezuela, and that's because they have this tremendous oil income, and they're able to do that. I mean, they've been spending billions, staffing and erecting schools, which they never had before, and all these illiterate people are becoming literate, and they have medical and dental care now, and so, you know, a lot of good is being done with the money that's there from oil. But other countries don't have that luxury. But the real reason behind of all this is that the elitists in our country and in other countries have been looting those nations for years.
I'm afraid you're right, Bob, and it's not a nice thing to think of, but this is the way the game has been played. And it was set up to be played that way, and those who haven't read that book, Confessions of Economic Hitman, by a man who was in the front lines of this, really need to get the book. We carry it, as well as four interviews I've done with Joseph Perkins, where he lays out exactly how the game is played, using the IMF and the World Bank to enslave the people in third world countries. And his job was to get those countries to go into debt, so that they could never pay off the debt. And, of course, they would then have to tax the people just to pay the interest on the debt, a perpetual debt. And it's an amazing story.
Yeah, the publishers were nice enough to send me a copy last week.
Now, did you enjoy it?
No. And I was rather surprised that not many publishers do that. And I just haven't gotten to it yet. You know the voluminous reading that I have to do every day.
I know you do, but you really want to read that book. I think it's well worthwhile. And we do carry the book, and it's one of the few books by a radical leftist that we do carry, because we think that what he says is absolutely right. I don't believe in his spiritual views, I don't believe in his political views, but I think he's telling you exactly what he was part of. Well, let's talk a little bit about what's going on here in America, because I noticed in your latest international forecast, you were saying now we're borrowing almost $3 billion a day. What is it, $2.9 billion a day?
That's correct. And historically, about 43 to 45% of that has been funded by other foreign central banks, and that figure has dropped down into the low 20s. And that means I have to find other people to buy Treasury paper as it's rolled, and every time they roll it for their funding, the amount gets bigger because they don't pay the interest off. And one of the main factors in that purchase of U.S. Treasuries and agencies, which are Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and Sallie Mae and Federal Home Loan Bank, etc., one of the big buyers has been Japanese institutions and the public, because their 10-year rates are 1.5%. And the 10-year rates on U.S. Treasury paper are right now around 4.25. And so there's quite a gap in there. Now, of course, they realize that if the value of the dollar goes down, they can take a capital loss, but they're willing to do it anyway. Well, even that buying has started to dry up. And so who is the buyer now? Well, unnamed parties in the Cayman Islands and offshore in general.
And you really feel that this is the Fed and, our government actually buying up their own bonds with new money that they've created out of nothing, which is highly inflationary, isn't it?
Absolutely. Immediately. Immediate monetization.
And, of course, it's wonderful that when you can create money out of nothing, you can just go ahead and print it or make it a bank entry. But eventually, of course, the whole thing collapses because of financial insolvency. And this is what happens to every country and always has. It's been tried many times before. And as Aristotle said, there's nothing wrong with fiat money as long as you have people with godlike intelligence. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Bob Chapman. Bob, go ahead and pick up the story. I don't really think our leaders have the godlike intelligence. Aristotle said that over 2,200 years ago. There's nothing wrong with fiat money as long as you have people running the government who have godlike intelligence.
Yeah, well, none of those exist. And, you know, some of them would like to think that they're godlike, all the way from Caligula to George W. Bush. And I think Caligula probably was a lot smarter. But anyway, no, that isn't the answer. And there isn't an easy answer, because the people who are running things from behind the scenes, they want world government. And they are making these things happen. And they want the world, particularly the United States and Western Europe, financially on their knees, so they can force them to accept world government. And this is really what this is all about. You can banter and banter and banter around, but if you spent 46 years in it like I do, you'd come up with the same conclusion.
I think you're absolutely right. I think that they're going to destroy our economy, and they're probably going to plunge us into a war. And out of the coming chaos, the people will be willing to give up their freedom and their national sovereignty. And that's how you change the world, is through crisis. And that's just where they're leading us. Well, tell us, you write quite about General Motors and their problems, because one time they said, you know, what's good for General Motors is good for America. What's happening to General Motors?
Well, first of all, their credit rating, like Ford's, was just lowered. The last three years, they've been virtually giving cars away. They haven't been making much money on them. I think 27% of their earnings, 28%, came from the production of cars and trucks. And were it not for the SUV, they probably wouldn't have made much money at all. They're a financial company, and what they've been doing is writing mortgages and then packaging them and running them through Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, which means that they're the vicissitudes of the real estate market. And if the real estate market has a correction like we had between 1989 and 92, when the house prices in California went down 40%, and in some areas even more than that, and I think that's very doable, in as much as the debt today is colossal compared to that period. And so I think they're going to get in further trouble on their lending. And on top of that, they and Ford together have to do $165 billion in further financing next year, and they're going to have to compete with the U.S. government, and I don't know whether anybody's going to want to buy these junk bonds, because that's what they are.
Well, now, what are they paying? What interest rate are they paying on these?
Well, right now, on the euro-denominated General Motors bonds, the yield is 11.2%.
How can you make any money if you're borrowing money at 11.2%? What do you have to lend it at to come out ahead?
Well, I projected something in the order of 13 to 14% is what they're going to have to pay to get money, because the situation daily deteriorates. Not from the real estate point of view as yet, but in the production end of the company. And besides that, General Motors is $17 billion offside in their pension plan.
This is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Bob Chapman. We're talking about what's happening to General Motors. He said that their bonds are really becoming increasingly junk bonds. In Europe right now, when GM is trying to borrow money in Europe, why they're having to pay over 11% interest on it. And how do you make money on money you're borrowing when you got to pay 11% interest to borrow the money? And Bob feels that, you know, when they try to refinance their massive billions of dollars they've got to come up with within this next year or so, And the United States government is have to go into the money market to borrow money just to keep the wheels of government running, because we're going behind every single day with, well, right now, a $600 to $700 billion deficit for the coming year. And I think Bob is raising the question, who's going to be buying GM bonds? And, of course, GM can't borrow money. They don't survive as a country. Would that be a fair statement?
That's absolutely correct. And as we came into the break, I was saying that they are also offside $17 billion in their pension plan. And I think what they're doing is, I think they're in the process of trying to spin off GMAC, which is a financing arm. And I think they intend to let General Motors go bankrupt. And there's no judge in the world that's going to allow that, because it's transparent that they would have dumped the value of the General Motors producing and separated the two companies as a subterfuge.
Now, wouldn't that be just so they wouldn't have to pay their pension funds and wouldn't have to then pay the what they pledged to pay for the health care of retired workers?
Yes, that's true. And that goes for Delphi, which they spun off several years ago. And they are deeply in trouble, as Vistatron, which is the Ford Motor subsidiary that does their parts. And I think the whole thing's going down. And I think it'll take a year and a half, 2 years to do it. And I also believe that by that time, the real estate market will have gone down at least 10 or 15%, if not more. And then I think GMAC and other lenders like General Electric will be in serious trouble. We're headed for some really, really rocky times.
Well, certainly if General Motors and Ford were to have serious financial problems, they're two of the largest, you know, producers in this country. And, of course, my fear is that it sounds like China Motors is all poised and ready to start shipping Chinese cars into this country, mass imports into this country or exports to this country. And I know here in my own community, they already have their dealership all set up. They're just waiting for those cars to begin to arrive, and they'll undercut anything we have here. They're going to be able to sell them at a fraction of the cost of American cars.
Well, I think we're looking at, all told, when you consider all the backup jobs, we're looking at unemployment of an additional 5 million people in Indiana, Ohio, Michigan, Quebec, and Ontario. And that is a massive fallout.
Well, what about
that's what's going to happen.
What about the people, though, who are depending on those pensions that they've been promised?
Well, they're not going to get them. I played golf this morning with a man who is a General Motors pensionee. And I told him what was going on. He just looked at me and says, "Don't tell me that." I said, "Well, those are just the facts. They're in trouble." And he says, "What do you think might happen?" I said, "Well, the U.S. government does not want to handle it under the Pension Guarantee Benefit Corporation because they're looking at, maybe $50 to $100 billion. And that's the American taxpayer, of course. And I think that they'll end up getting 25 cents of the dollar, just like the people at UAL.
Well, I think that we're in for very, very difficult times because they have this pension guarantee benefit corporation. And, of course, the trouble is that they're already, behind $15 or $20 million, billion dollars that they, and, of course, there's no money there.
No, there's $23 billion they're behind.
$23 billion that they're behind
and
already.
It was only 8 months ago, it was $10 billion.
And these are just from companies that have gone bankrupt and simply just dumping all their liability onto the pension benefit guarantee company, corporation?
That's right. Yeah, and another thing, too, is that if General Motors and Ford go under, they're not going to be paying insurance to the pension benefit guarantee corporation. And that means that their income is going to drop precipitously.
Well, we'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening, Bob Chapman. And, of course, I want you to know I am not a financial advisor. I'm just a historian watching and seeing what's happening. Adalmer Chrysler is actually building a new plant over in communist China, and they're going to mass-produce cars over in China and then bring them in and sell them here on the market, right along with the Chinese Motor Corporation. The Daimler Chrysler cars may be better than the Chinese cars. Maybe they won't, actually. I'm sure the quality control is pretty good on the Chinese cars. The Koreans are over there building cars in China to mass produce there and ship in the United States. So I think that people have to understand where we're headed. An organized, orchestrated effort by the people at the highest echelons of our government to destroy the automotive industry in this country, and that's what globalization is all about. Well, first of all, I want, Bob, you to tell our listeners how they can get hold of you, how they can get hold of the International Forecaster, because it's something I read every week. I read two things every week. One of them is the World Affairs Brief, and the other is Bob Chapman. You'll get information there you'll never get elsewhere. How can people get in touch with you and get your information, Bob?
We have a toll-free number they can call, and that number is 800-685-4042. 800-685-4042. For those of you who are on the Internet, we have a site. The site address is theinternationalforecaster.com. The International FORECASTER.com. And those of you who would like to email me, and we answer everybody's questions, even going into portfolios, and we don't charge for that. That address is international_. An underscore is like a dash, only it's lowered down. It's like a line on a line. So it's international_forecaster, FORECASTER, at yahoo.com. And we publish by email every week, 48 or more times a year, and we have a hard copy that goes out twice a month, and it's about business, finance, economics, and social and political issues, and we've been at this for 46 years.
Well, Bob, so last week, one day the market just dropped out of bed, down 200 points, and then the next day it's suddenly just zooming back up again. Is this all manipulation?
Absolutely. And how it's done is through the Working Group of Financial Markets, which was created under the Reagan administration by executive order. And most people didn't even know that existed. And we call it the Bunch Protection Team.
Hold that for just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is Bob Chapman, the International Forecaster. And, of course, we're talking about the gyrations of the market last week. Why would it drop out 200 points one day and come back so strongly the next day? And Bob says there is something called the Plunge Protection Team, created during the Reagan administration to regulate the stock market. And if you and I were to manipulate the stock market, we'd go to prison. The government does it because they want to keep the perception of the American people to the point that everything's fine, there's just nothing to worry about. Sort of like the cows, you know, before they put them down the chute down to there where they're going to be slaughtered, but you don't want those cows to know what's going to lies ahead. Sort of, well, pretty much like what's going on here in America today. Pick up the story there, Bob.
There's also another group, which is the Federal Reserve, which is privately owned, and they have the ability to create money out of thin air, and they go into the market every day and buy treasury paper. Sometimes they sell it, but more often they buy it. And they buy that treasury paper, and which credits the bank's books and debits their own, and then they direct the banks to send the money to 31 dealers who are stock brokerage firms and investment banking houses. And they in turn tell them how they want the markets rigged that day. And so between the two of them coordinating, right now the figure is the Fed is using close to $76 billion as of today. And that's why the market was up today, because they increased it from about $68 billion. And so with that $8 billion, they went in the market today bought all the indexes and ran the market up.
And
it goes on all the time.
What you're doing is suggesting it's all manipulated.
Totally. Everything.
All right. So when you go in there, why, of course, it's just sort of like going into under playing roulette, but you know that somebody's is going to control the roulette wheel. So, they're never going to, of course, they want everybody to feel good about what's going on, and a lot of people are going to win, but in the final analysis, why, they're going to be wiped out financially. But you want to keep them in the game as long as possible. Would that be a good analogy?
Yes, and the whole system is compromised. That's what the problem is. And it's been done deliberately, not only to accumulate wealth and power, but again, to financially neuter Western Europe and the United States, so again, that they will accept world government.
All right. We've got Roger calling in from Pennsylvania. Roger, you have a question for our guest.
Yes, I do. And Bob, you can hear me okay?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes.
Yeah, I'd like you to repeat those horrified numbers of you laid out just over a week ago elsewhere, and that kind of put the...
What numbers about what, Roger?
Well, put the head on the horrors of both our trade and finance policies, beginning with the line where you said that whereas today over 40% of corporate earnings are in the financial sector compared with only 4% in 1985, and could you pick it up from there?
Well, and thank you for bringing it up. You know, it's very difficult for me to remember all these numbers. I do pretty good at it, but I hadn't thought about that since I wrote it. But what has happened is we don't produce things anymore. About 15, 14, 13% of our exports are functioning today, whereas just 15 years ago, we were exporting approximately 26% of our GDP. And so what is filled in the meantime, rather than the export of manufactured goods, is the area of finance. So we have an economy that's basically built on exchanging money for one thing or another.
But there's nothing behind the money. It's all...
Nothing's being created.
Right, right.
And that... You also mentioned that a full 25% of the valuation in the stock market is in the same financial sector compared with only, I believe it was 5% in the 70s.
Yes, and that's very true as well. And it's continuing to head headlong in that direction, which is the more finance direction. And I see nothing to stop it until the system comes down. And I can guarantee you one thing. The system is coming down. And you may not want to hear that, but it is going to come down.
Well, Bob, I was very interested in your latest forecaster. When you were talking about, I think it was a Chase in Manhattan Bank, that has all these derivatives. In other words, they're sort of through the derivative market. Why they're actually allowing all of the, most of the banks, to hedge. And so, what do they have? Half of the derivatives here in the United States, something like that?
Approximately. And there's only about five banks that own about 90%, they being the biggest one. And so, of course, when the derivative market fails, which it will, and when that happens, those banks will be anointed as too big to fail. And but that won't help other people who have either probably bought those derivatives. They'll be out of luck because they won't be honored.
And I think it was Warren Buffett who said it so well. He said, derivatives are financial weapons of mass destruction, currently latent but potentially lethal. I thought that was just such a beautiful turn on words. Derivatives are financial weapons of mass destruction, currently latent but potentially lethal. In other words, when this house of cards comes down, why the people who have the derivatives are going to pull all the other cards down with them. Would that be a fair statement?
Well, I believe that's true. And for those of you who don't know what a derivative is, it's a form of insurance. And I'll give you an example. If you buy a bond, and let's say it's 10-year U.S. Treasury, and it's yielding to 4.25%, and you're really interested in the 4.25%, not taking the currency risk inherent in the bond itself. In other words, not only the currency, but if interest rates go up, the value of the bond goes down. You don't want that to happen if you're only interested in the 4.25%. So you go to J.P. Morgan, and you say, look, I want you to write me some derivatives on these bonds that I have, and they will do that, and they will charge you perhaps a half a point. So you get a net 3.75%, and you can't get hurt unless J.P. Morgan goes under and can't pay you off. And so that's what they are. They're a form of insurance. Actually, what it is a gigantic bookmaking operation.
Only because bookmaking is illegal, you know, for anybody else but the banks and the very, very favorite few. Anything else you wanted to say, Roger?
Just God bless and God save the Republic, if not without considerable pain. God bless.
Thanks very much, Roger. And our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And what the average individual doesn't understand is that at one time, America was the greatest creditor nation in the world. All the other countries and people and corporations came to America to borrow money. America, in recent years, has become the greatest debtor nation in the world. And, of course, we're totally dependent upon other nations to finance our deficits. And if those nations stop financing our deficits, then, of course, they've got to monetize the deficits. And this is highly inflationary and will destroy the value of the dollar very, very quickly. Would that be a fair statement, Bob?
Absolutely. And we're headed very quickly toward that. And I think next year is going to be the beginning of much higher interest rates, 0.75% this year and the remainder of the year, which would put mortgages around, about a point higher. And they're around 5.85%, so close to 7%. And then 2006, I expect at least 1 point and maybe more. Actually, what we need is 3 points. And that will only stop the hemorrhaging for the moment. And it's just going to get progressively worse. No nation in history has ever done what we're doing now and ever financially survived.
All right, let's go to Tim, who's calling here from, we've got Tom in Ohio. We've got, let's try this one. Is this Tim or Tom?
This is Tim.
Okay, Tim, did you have a question or comment?
Yes, I had a couple questions, and I'll hang up. For the last 29 years, America, we've had this trade deficit for 29 years now, where 10 years ago it was $68 billion. Today it's $680 billion. Now, Kevin Kearns, he's the president of U.S. Business and Industry Council, he says that America hasn't had a raise in 29 years. This is why our women and our children had to go into the workforce, not so much because of this women's lib. I'd like you to address that. And also, Condoleezza flew to Japan last month to convince Japan that America's beef is safe. I wanted to know, does the billion-dollar beef industry, do they pay for this trip over there to Japan? Thank you.
Okay, fine. Thank you very much. And first of all, what would your response be to the two questions? The first one had to do with the fact that, you know, we have this massive debt now. I mean, 10 years ago, our deficit, the trade deficit, was $68 billion. Now, of course, it's $680 billion, something like that. Pretty close, one way or the other.
Well, I think it's going to continue to get worse until people won't finance it. People being foreigners. And I think it's already begun.
I thought
and,
it was... go ahead.
Pardon me?
Go ahead.
No.
I was just going to say, you know, Paul Volcker, I'm sure you read his remarks this last week.
Yep.
This article he wrote in the Washington, Washington Post, where, of course, he's basically saying we're skating on thin ice. You know, if we don't get things, to straighten out, this whole thing's going to fall apart. And what needs to be done is seldom done. It's always put off till later, and by then it's too late. And that was summarizing what he's saying. Here's a man, of course, who knows what needs to be done and pointing out we're just not doing it, and this could lead to really almost the destruction of our economic system. In essence, that's what he said. Isn't it pretty close?
Absolutely. And, you know, he knows because that's what he did in the early 1980s. He purged the system. He was able to do it at that time, because we didn't have the overhang of tremendous debt that we have today. And so It's going to be very nasty, and that's what he's telling us.
Right.
In addressing the other question, all of the advanced countries that have high income levels, Western Europe, the United States, and Canada, the farming in all of those nations, if they open up completely to foreign exports of foods of one kind or another into the United States, it'll totally wipe out our farming industry, which is subsidized.
Right.
And I didn't see the comments on sugar beets, but in essence, what CAFTA is all about is taking and allowing the Central American nations to send agricultural goods, and particularly sugar, into the United States. And yes, there is a sugar industry which is protected big time, and we can buy sugar much cheaply elsewhere. The problem is this. If we export, or we allow foreign governments, foreign countries, to continue to suck all of our manufacturing jobs out, and then they suck all of the farming jobs out, and on and on and on, they're going into technology now. We have 150,000 programmers working in Bangalore who just took jobs away from Silicon Valley. And it's going to continue. Now, you say to yourself, how can we let that happen? Well, I don't know how we let that happen, but it is happening.
I think.
What is the answer?
I think they know exactly what's happening. They just don't want the American people to know what's happening.
But the answer is tariffs. And, you know, this is what Ronald Reagan did in the mid-1980s. He instituted tariffs and brought that to a halt because he wasn't going to let it happen no matter what the elitists wanted to do in that regard. And we've got to do it again. Now, I've written a piece for next week in the International Forecaster, which you can get a free copy of by calling that toll-free number. And I go into all of the bills that have just been put up. There's three of them. One of them is being held in abeyance for 6 months, which would have tariffs for China of 27.5%. on all the goods that they shipped into the United States. But there's a couple of other bills that may be even better, and one of which says anything that comes into the United States that is subsidized by currency manipulation, and they all manipulate their currencies, will all be charged a tariff. It's the only way that we can protect America. It has nothing to do with laissez-faire and free trade, and everything to do with destroying our country. And anybody who can't see that is blind.
You're absolutely
right. Look at the jobs we've lost already. Hundreds of millions of people have lost, you know, not hundreds of millions, but millions of people have lost very good jobs, and they'll never be able to get anything like that back again. And if we continue to do what we are doing, ripping the heart out of our country, we're not going to have anything left.
You're absolutely right. Let's go to Tom calling from Ohio. Tom, I've got a question.
Well, they create money out of nothing, limit them, you and me, and charge us interest on it. We run up a phony debt, and they take control of the freshwater supply of the Great Lakes and call it through the International Monetary Fund. And a scenario that I heard was towards the end, you'll be asked to drive to the post office, register, turn your car keys in. Oh, by the way, bring your valuables. There'll be a truck waiting in the back to take you to a camp or a factory.
And we'll take care of you. Don't you worry.
Yeah.
And believe me, I think it sounds horrible, but I think this can happen in America.
They don't believe it. I try to tell the working man. I'm a working man, and you know, and I try to tell them what I've learned over the years from you folks, and they absolutely don't believe it. They think I'm stark raving mad, and you know. But I just go to the next one and try to tell them, and
just keep. You'll find some people, and don't get discouraged. Just
tell
them. Your job is to tell them. It's really up to a lot of these people are spiritually blinded, but of course, if the Lord wants them to hear, they're going to hear it.
Question for Bob. Bob, if Quebec goes, Michigan, Indiana has already gone, as far as I'm concerned, and Ohio, which is just you know, that's the end. There's no other industry in this country.
Oh, that's correct. That'll just about do it.
That's it. There's nothing left. I mean, they moved a few factories from California over to Arizona, Kingman, Arizona, and that's it.
Well, Ray, just get yourself out of debt as much as, pardon me, Tom, get yourself out of debt.
I am. I don't have any debt.
Try to start. You've got to be prepared to weather the storm.
Can I hold over, doctor?
Oh, okay, fine. Hold on. Go ahead. What did you want to say? We've got about 10.
I wanted to ask Bob. I know he's been asked this a lot. Is Bob there?
He's still here.
Yes, I am.
Do you really have a time factor and a kind of a...
How soon is it going to be?
Over the next few years, it's going to be extraordinarily difficult because of the factors we just talked about in higher interest rates. And the financial system's going to come apart.
Okay, thanks very much. We're going to...
Where would I go?
Well, right now, there's Dr. Stan here, and we've got two more callers. Tom, I hate to cut you off. We got Ray in Santa Cruz and Eric in Compton. Ray, quick question.
Well, my question was revolved around the same lines as the other man, but I give this country about 5 years, but the question is, what then? I mean, are we going to have a police state? Is the UN going to have soldiers guarding our homes, or are we going to have any homes, or, you know, I mean, that the question that the guy asked about the, you know, turning your keys into the bank and everything and going off into a transit camp, that seems to be what they really want.
They want a dictatorship in America. They want one world government. But, Ray, it's a spiritual battle, and there are powerful spiritual forces on the other side.
Yeah, they're devils.
And you really can't understand it unless you understand that this whole thing is energized by truly demonic forces. Bob, how would you respond to Ray and to Tom? Both of them are saying, this sounds a terrible scenario. So what do we have to offer them? What hope is there?
Right.
I don't think there's an awful lot. It's like people say to me, well, you know, why do you say that gold and silver assets are the only thing to hold? Well, I don't know anything else to hold. And I also know that I agree with you two gentlemen. And my advice, too, is to get out of debt, have food in your home that'll last you for several months,
right,
and be well-armed.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the other thing, too. But
the other thing is, Ray, make sure you've got a personal relationship with our Lord, because you're not going to get through this. And the people who have it, we may lose everything material we have.
We will. But God will feed us. You know?
Amen. We do the best we can, and that's all we can do. God bless. Thanks very much. And let's go to Eric calling. Eric, quick question.
Oh, man. Okay, Doc. How will my gold and silver help me if I had any? How will it help me when the system collapses? And one more quick answer.
How would you respond to that?
Because currencies may not be worth anything at all. And always, historically, gold and silver, particularly coins, had value, and you'll be able to buy something with them. People know what they are. And so if somebody's got some sugar and you've got a coin, you're going to be able to buy some sugar.
And all you can do is hope and pray that you'll be able to survive, because we're in for very difficult times. No instance in all history where a nation turned against God when eventually God hasn't turned against the nation. Eric, we're out of time. Bob, thank you so very much for being with us. It's always a pleasure to have you with us. And do you have a parting thought for our listeners?
No, I think we did a pretty good job of covering everything tonight, but I love being on your program, and I'm looking forward to coming back soon.
Well, you will, don't you worry. God bless, and thanks so very much. Our guest... Well, this is Dr. Stan. I apologize to Ray and Tom and Eric, but of course we're running out of time, and I think we simply gave you sort of a bleak picture tonight, but you have to understand it's a spiritual battle. When you do, it isn't so hopeless at all. What's your relationship with the Lord? Do you understand that there really are demonic forces? There is another dimension out there. There really are people who worship Lucifer, and some of them are working at the highest levels of our government. These are people who've sold their souls, as it were. And if you haven't yet seen the videos that we carry, the 3, the 4, the 10-hour videos, they sold their souls for rock and roll. If you're intrigued by what you've heard about Michael Jackson, you need to see these videos. You need to understand where Michael Jackson was really coming from. You have to understand we're involved in a spiritual battle, and there really are people who are on the other side and that have been given great wealth and great power because they sold their souls to the devil. So they sold their souls for rock and roll. Let me recommend it to you very, very strongly, along with Megiddo 1 and Megiddo 2, two videos put together by our good friend Chris Pinto. We'll give you a lot of the spiritual background behind what's going on. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then, certainly, we would point out, we have a number of books on the finances. One of the great books we have is called The Coming Battle. It was written in 1891 or 92. It was written well over 100 years ago, talking about how the bankers had ripped off the system and before. And, of course, then what the writer anticipated would happen in the future, and you can see it all coming to pass today. This is book 1891 or 1892, The Coming Battle. If you haven't read The Creature from Jekyll Island, you need to get it. You need to read Professor Sutton's three books. We carry The Federal Reserve Conspiracy, Gold for Survival, and Gold for Investment. Will we survive what lies ahead? I don't know. But our job is to be as prepared as we can, and of course, to be as close to the Lord as we can, because that's the only thing I believe that's going to get any of us through the coming difficult times. And then, of course, we carry the book entitled Fiat Money, Inflation in France. That's Fiat Money, Inflation in France. And then a wonderful video. It's called Phenomenon, The Money Men. Or the Monopoly Men, and these will give you probably a graduate course in what's happening economically. I could also suggest you go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Pull down the August, September, and October 2004 newsletters. August, September, and October 2004 newsletters. Copy them, read them, study them, check out the references, and understand what Alan Greenspan really thinks, what Warren Buffett really thinks, what George Soros and Bill Gates really think. Get that information. It's all there, and we'll be getting some more videos and other information available for you so that you can begin, of course, not only preparing yourself, but talking to other people. The best thing you can do is tell people what's going on, and like Tom was saying, a lot of people don't want to hear. But it's not up to you to convince them. It's your job to tell them what's happening, and it's up to the Lord, of course, to influence them. But if you tell them and they hear it from some other place, or maybe they'll tune in to Radio Liberty, or maybe they'll just be driving down the road and hear one of our programs and be intrigued and start listening, and that's how I got started on this 43 years ago. And I feel that we can reach others. I know we've reached them all over the world through this wonderful means of shortwave and internet. So remember, of course, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Please remember our website, RadioLiberty.com. We hope many of you will want to join the Radio Liberty family and help us as we reach out 5 hours a day to people all around the world. And then pray for America. Pray for revival, but please pray for Radio Liberty for our provision and protection. Until tomorrow, may the Lord be with you.